This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, good afternoon. It's the meeting of the Employee Assembly. Today is Wednesday, May 1st. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Are there any late additions to the agenda?
Yes, Care Fund.
Care Fund? Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else? David?
I think we should look at
TCAT. Yeah. Okay. Anything else?
I think we have a meeting schedule.
The one change to the agenda I'd like to make is that we move on business of the day, point B, move executive committee election down to the bottom. Because this will be elections of new members, that will allow those of us who will not be on the membership next year to leave and the new membership to convene an executive session and vote in their new leaders. So I'll do that. Okay, so quickly, can we look at the minutes from the last meeting? Does anyone have any changes or additions to those minutes?
Motion approved.
Great. All in favor?
Aye.
Any extensions? Any no's? Good. Thank you. Okay, next we'll move right on to the proposed revisions for Policy 6.4. So Alan Mittman has joined us along with Lennox Cole Williams and Mary Beth Grant to talk about the new policy on sexual harassment and sexual assault and violence.
Thank you, Tanya. Impeccable timing. She's the lead Title IX coordinator, and Mary Beth and I are deputy Title IX coordinators. We've been on a little bit of a roadshow explaining proposed changes to the policy that prohibits discrimination and harassment on campus, and specifically to changes that are being made in connection with claims of sexual harassment, sexual assault, and sexual violence. And right up front, for employee claims, staff claims, in this regard, and today's discussion will only be about sexual harassment justice claims. The only modification will be in the rather uncommon event of a staff member bringing a claim against the student. On the current policy, that claim would go under the code of conduct and would be adjudicated by Mary Beth in connection with that process. Now, all claims against students, whether it be by another student, member of the faculty, or member of staff, will be moved to policy 6.4 administration procedure. So, with that preamble, I can move to the next slide. So, I'm going to give you a little background very quickly about how we arrived at the point we're at now. We'll identify a few of the issues that are most prominent in connection with the changes, so you'll be familiar with them. And then I'd like to leave time for some questions and comments. So, continue, please. So, the background. The policy that my office administers, Policy 6.4, has been around since 1996. It prohibits all forms of discrimination and harassment based on protected status. Again, they're focusing on sexual harassment for a number of reasons, one of which is in 2011, the Office of Civil Rights, Department of Education, issued a Dear Colleague letter that clarified and or changed some of the procedures for adjudicating claims of sexual harassment, and mostly geared toward claims against students. Following upon that last spring, the UA resolved and the President approved a set of changes that we were to produce and bring forward to the community in connection with the requirements under law and some procedural requirements that we wanted to change. And in addition, mandated that we incorporate what was policy 6.3, which is a sexual assault policy, really a policy of resources and what to do without any actionable provision. It says if you had a claim that you believe you were sexually assaulted, go see another process. Go to the code if you're a student. Go to 6.4 if you're a staff or faculty. So rather than have that out there, we've incorporated the best of that policy definition, contract, resources, into 6.4. And then since that time, the Title IX coordinators have been meeting. The other one that's not here today is Anita Brenner from Athletics. We've been meeting with an executive committee to review proposed changes. We've met with the UA, the SA, the GPSA, and now the EA, my homeroom. So I'm delighted to be here. I do appreciate the time and being able to be early on the agenda. We have a 1 o'clock meeting open to the public at Malai Hall, which I'll be leaving this meeting early to attend. How does the policy 6.4 operate? Mary Beth came up with this great acronym, IRA, Investigate, Review, and Appeal. And it's the same way as operates under the code, except the review and the appeal process are different. And they've been made more student-friendly, more party-friendly in the changes that are going to announce. Some of these things that haven't changed, at any time in the investigative process, an agreement can be made to resolve a claim, and that won't change. And as exists now, both parties will have ample opportunity, to be heard during the investigation, during the review, and during the appeal. So let's dig in, Ari, next slide on the investigation. So investigation, no changes. The faculty and staff respondents being the parties who are alleged to have violated the policy. For faculty and staff respondents, our office will continue to do the investigation. No change there. For student respondents, the office of the JA will continue to do the investigation, but it will be now under policy 6.4, but it will be a very similar process to what is engaged in now by the JA. That is fairly the same under investigation. Where things begin to change is under the review. So what the investigator does is conduct a thorough investigation with parties, with witnesses, reviewing documentation. Ultimately, it submits a report which the parties can review and comment on to somebody we're calling now the reviewer. The investigator makes no determination as to the final outcome and or discipline. It reports on the facts and whether or not the policy has been violated, gives recommendations, and then it's up to the reviewer to act. The reviewer, again, no changes for faculty and staff. The faculty reviewer is the dean of the college, that's applicable. Same. The staff respondent, the VP of the unit, is the reviewer, same. And for student respondents, this is a change. Their reviewer will be an appointed faculty member. It may well be drawn from a pool of prior hearing and review board chairs. These are people who sit on the code of conduct matters and hear cases like this presently. And in the past, they have a good feel for the evidence that needs to be induced. They have a good feel for the precedents that have been involved. And Mary Beth works with them closely. So either people like that and or faculty who are in the field who have some knowledge of claims of sexual harassment, particularly involving recruiting, will be the reviewer. They'll be appointed probably by the president and the dean of faculty. So again, faculty and staff, no change. For student respondents, there will be a change as to who's the reviewer. Rather than going before a hearing board and a panel, they'll have a review, which will be on paper, or just paper submission. It won't involve the what is described by others as embarrassing, uncomfortable appearance before a big panel, explaining some rather intimate, usually fact. In that context, so it should be much more user friendly. That reviewer will then issue a final decision. It will go to whether or not there's been a violation, and if so, what the discipline is, if any. That decision can be appealed, which is the A part of the IRA, in two ways. If you're the complainant, and this is a new wrinkle, it's already in policy because it was required by law, we have to have equivalent appeal processes, both for the party bringing the case and the party against whom the case is brought. Under old policy, there was really no appeal for the complaining party. The law, the law. But for claims of sexual harassment, violence, and assault, we've included, and this is already in the policy, a provision that for claims against faculty, the losing party, the complainant, can appeal to the provost. For claims against staff, the losing party can appeal to the vice president of human resources and safety services. And for claims against students, that appeal would also go by the complaining to the losing party to the VP of students of academic services. So that would be Mary Opperman for the staff and Susan Murphy, president, Thomas Stewart, and Sumlin for the provost office. So that's mandated. That's new, but it's mandated, and we've already made those changes for faculty and staff, and we have to add the students on as well. The appeal for respondents is the second type of appeal, and that is not changing for staff or faculty. If you've been found to be in violation and some discipline has been imposed, then you would access your grievance policy, whatever that is. If you're a tenured faculty, there's a tenured faculty policy. If you're a staff member, there's a grievance policy. So that would be the way that would all be handled. Footnote to some of you, including my friend right here, who supervise student employees. Student employees will now be treated for all purposes as students. Currently, their rights are as student employees. They're really in their employee hat. Well, we felt among the Title IX coordinators and our executives and have gotten good support for this, that a student is really essentially a student. The fact that they may be in a hotel doing some work for bread doesn't change the fact that they're primarily students and that they've committed an act, for instance, of sexual violence, and that's been established. The consequences should be meted out in their student hat. Not to be fired from working for you and welcome to conduct your business at Cornell like nothing else happened. So that's I think a logical change and well received. By the way, for those of you who are lawyers in the room, the review process that will be conducted on the appeal will not be a de novo review. De novo review meaning that the appeal board person will undertake an investigation from scratch, de novo, from start. Interview people, establish facts, look at the, from as though the appeal, the review process clause has never happened. It will not be that. It will be a review to look for errors, to look for something that might be arbitrary or capricious, to make sure that the process was done right, that it was not intended to reopen the entire case from scratch. That you always have that one Latin phrase in every situation. All right, so what have we accomplished today? The community has already decided on a number of things. We're going to use policy 6.4 for this process. That's been established for the process against students. That's what was brought to the assembly last spring and approved by the president. We're also using the so-called preponderance of the evidence standard. Sorry, no Latin phrase for that, but you might consider that the more likely than not standard. Currently, in other proceedings under the Code of Conduct, there's a higher standard, a clear convincing evidence standard. The Dear Colleague letter that I mentioned before made it clear that the appropriate standard should be more likely than not. That is the standard under 6.4, so there's no change there. But the claims against students, and that has already been made on an interim basis in the Code of Conduct, the standard would be more likely than not for preponderance of the evidence. Again, I mentioned there will be equivalent avenues for appeal, both by the complainant and the respondent, and we've decided, it's already been decided to incorporate the sexual assault policy, which again was not an actionable policy, it was resources and what to do. We put the useful parts of that into 6.4. So our goal in going on our little dog and pony show, as we've been doing recently, is trying to get ideas for making the process go smoothly, suggestions to make sure fairness abounds, which is really the phrase that was really happening. Make sure fairness abounds for all parties. We think we've done that. We have good confidence in the policy 6.4. I learned how to do it under the net some years ago, and we've been doing it since 2002. And Mary Beth is well skilled at investigating and determining the facts. So we're confident that the process will work and that the review and appeal with input will be fair and to all parties. If you have the opportunity to look at the policy, it's been posted on our new share site, SAARE, to the new resource for accessing information about sexual harassment matters, whether it be education, activism, how to report claims. It's a really top-notch site that we put together, and embedded into that site is the proposed policy, and we talked about language. We're meeting with the PAG group, Policy Advisory Group. Some of you are aware of that's a group of Cornell faculty staff members from around the university who review every policy that goes through the process. And they look at it very carefully, particularly for language, commas, semicolons, dashes. I mean, it gets quite the review by the PAG group. And so we'll be doing that on May 20th. So if you have any particular comments about drafting before May 20th, we'll be the time to do that. And then if you have any ideas about how to communicate it, there's been a lot of communication about these open meetings, so the corporate blur class. It's getting around. Maybe the DA could include it in one of its methods to work on our communication to share to access it there. So that's it. I've given my time and have a few minutes for questions or comments. Some of you have heard this because we have multiple groups that have met. We did a little mini stakeholder group with representatives of the assembly and others. Before meeting with the assembly themselves, and some of you are on the other assembly, so some of you have heard it. So far, it's gotten good feedback. The UA last night had no objections to it, and we were left open if you want to communicate. But, any questions?
Just for clarification purposes, for the sexual harassment piece in the workplace with students,
right?
So if we have students doing thousands of internships that are paid, like a Merrill Lynch or whatever, and I'm trying to understand, so internally in Cornell, on Cornell payroll, work study, they're not subjected to the normal federal and state, you know, law or whatever the you know what I mean? If there's a grievance or there's something between a staff member and a student, in the normal workplace, we were saying it's different if it happens on the Cornell umbrella, that they're under the umbrella of the student. For instance, they're trying to make sure I understand how that.
The external remedy, so that you're referring to, exists independently. Any faculty, staff, or student member, parent, visitor can access independently local, state, and federal grievance rights. They can bring, they can go to EEOC, they can go to State Division of Human Rights, they can go to Johnson County, they can do all that. This, what I've been talking about, maybe I can back up. This is an internal Cornell process that employers like Cornell make available to their faculty, staff, and students. So anybody in that category can access this process, and it will be implemented in the way that I described.
Right. I get it. I guess let me just articulate a better way. So if there's an incident with a student, they're at the Cornell workplace, let's say the hotel or whatever, you know, they're... the process, they're treated as a student, not as a employee.
That's right.
And that's what I'm trying to get clarification on. What's the lesson, or what's the shelter, what's the difference really at the end of the day between, why if I'm working, if I'm 18 or 19 years old, and I have a situation, whether it's under Cornell or another employer, why am I treated any different for that learning purpose of what I've done wrong? You know, I'm trying to understand that. Sorry, does that make sense? I'm just trying to understand why are they not treated as
an employee?
Yes, if they are on the payroll, of that employer, whether it be Cornell or that's what I'm just trying to understand. Does that make sense? Great. So in a positive way, we have more reach. That's what I was trying to get out of. Thank you. I almost sounded like, and I apologize, it almost sounded like they're not under the employee umbrella of they go right to the student, but what you're saying in a positive way, they're subjected to the normal employee.
Yeah, the employee umbrella doesn't go away. The manager, Greg, can investigate the matter, determine as a matter of employment that, I don't want the employee to approach it. It won't be under the 6.4 of this class, and that will go forward if it is due process.
It's due
process. That's right. But the employer never loses the right to take action with respect. The only thing is sort of a subtle point, but Greg would not be making a determination that there was sexual harassment here. He would say, I personally, I don't see it. I don't want this person working here. I witnessed it. I don't care if it's sexual harassment, if it's assault, if it's whatever it is. You do your process and figure that out. But I'm looking at the behavior. And you can always discipline for behavior, whether or not it falls within the policy. But if it's going to go by policy, then we want to make sure that there is a full hearing, there's a free depth of review, and so
and protect any other. That's, I mean, so that's actually better for the student body or the population.
Yeah.
It doesn't leave at the workplace. They have more control. That's why I'm saying a positive. I just didn't understand it.
Yep, that's it.
Thank you.
What's the thing you said that if the parties reach an agreement, they only one?
The parties can. It's not mandated. The parties working through the investigator, maybe even the reviewer, can decide on some resolution themselves. And in fact, Mary, maybe you can speak to how that happened.
Yeah, so I think you have a couple of examples from the student care area. Sometimes the complainants will come in and say, this thing, whatever the it is, X, habit, and I'm really unhappy about it. I really wanted to go on record. I really want somebody to talk to the person. But I really don't have the time or energy to go through a process of interviews and writing letters for the review or for the appeal. I just want somebody to know about it and so there could be some sort of action. So we would be able to maybe do a partial investigation or even sometimes no investigation and talk to the person who has been accused of this. Have the opportunity based on what the complainant is asking for to maybe work with an administrator to have better understanding of appropriate conduct within a sexual relationship or maybe in the context for you all in a work environment. I remember years and years ago when I was in my first job in my 20s, there was a group of men who really honestly did not understand some of the sexual harassment laws. And they were really nice men, but they were constantly making inappropriate comments and stuff. And I think there had been an opportunity for them to just have a conversation with someone. Things would have been very much more comfortable.
Mm-hmm. So, as long as that resolution was agreeable to the complainant, then
exactly. So, or maybe something else could happen where there's an investigation and the evidence is mixed, and each party feels like there's a risk to go forward, and there's some sort of middle ground that they both feel comfortable with. So, could be an admission of a violation. That's actually really common in the Kansas disciplinary system for all cases around this of this nature.
I have a quick question. Is there, so this is like the FCA, right?
Yes, exactly.
So is there, under this code, is there finality for, like the party's notice is over when an agreement is reached, or are they still unable to open that back up a little bit?
Yeah, in the 6.4, there's a mediation part of it. Not to get too technical into the fact that we cannot hold
lead agent, capital M, under the governing regulation, for claims of sexual assault violence that was against students. So stuff that is too upsetting, too much to cower down, too much to go wrong. That doesn't preclude you from coming through an arrangement, understanding that you're not going to fit two people in the room. Whatever the arrangement is, will be documented, and the people can pull out of it at any point. You know, if they feel this is not going well, I want an investigation, they can do that. But there does come a finality. At some point, there's some signing off, this matter is resolved on both sides, and then actually the enforcement of that agreement comes back to our office or near there. If somebody claims 6 months later, we can agree to this, and look what happened to me yesterday, then that agreement can be enforced by our office. So there's a mechanism for enforcement and a mechanism for finality.
And the difference that we have the interdisciplinary system, the JA can enter into an agreement with the accused person without the consent of the claim, so that wouldn't happen.
Yeah, okay.
I would just like to say I appreciate all of you walking this through the various assemblies. I know it's probably a lot of your time, but I think the way in which you went about it is to be commended, and just hope other members of the committee recognize that there really has been a lot of behind the scenes work that's coming to this. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Enjoy the rest of your
summer. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
So moving on, report from the chair. So the leadership breakfast, our last breakfast was with the vice provost of enrollment. Did I get that right? Okay. And he talked to us about student enrollment. We've got enrollment from, I think, all states except two, I think he said. 48 out of 50 states and quite a few countries. He talked about our need blind applications, the fact that we give a lot of aid to domestic students. We've also upped our giving to international students. So now we give funding to about 25 international students and a whole lot of
55.
Okay. I thought it was 55.
What is it? 50 or something.
Okay. Sorry.
It's a lot.
It is a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of students. But she spent quite a bit of time talking about how we try to get good representation from all over the place. We try to get good diversity. We talked about our applicant pool quite a bit and how he has to finesse the numbers. You know, each college is only allowed to enroll so many students. So kind of going back and forth and saying, you've got too many, so you've got to cut your number further. Conversations that he has with prospectives who might be really great but didn't make the cut for whatever reason and who have come back and said, I should have made the cut. What else did he say?
Better use of the wait list. If you're going to have a wait list, you've used it. And we saw that last year. There were quite a few students that were brought in on the minute.
So overall, good conversation with him.
And the acceptance piece is now online this year.
Which has actually improved our numbers in terms of students responding more quickly. So we were about 300 acceptances ahead of where we were at this time last year, which really scares Bridget.
No, but it's all good.
All good?
Yep, because it just pushes that number up, the date. So the number stays the same as the state we can.
Mm-hmm. It was good conversation, yeah.
So also that I think you probably already mentioned applications were up to like 40,000.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And endowment is like, I think it sounded like it at least doubled.
Yeah, endowment and scholarship.
There's a huge increase in endowment, so the amount of money that the university will be able to provide for media students will be there as they try and reach out to more of these populations.
That was the leadership breakfast. Bridget Mallon and I met with Mary as well on that same day. We talked about where we were going with the employee engagement survey response. Talked a little bit about where the EA should be in that process in the future. We need to think about where we want to be. Do we want to continue to be partners with them? I think that that would be a really good thing. We're rather than handing it off just to HR to kind of move forward, but to keep our involvement in that. So, you know, as the new term begins, we can put that information out there and make sure that we're still part of that conversation. When the final document goes over, we'll also have a piece in it about the EA and how we want to continue to be partners.
And it's so close, it hurts.
Yes. Very painful at the moment. We also spent some time talking with Mary, and I just want to kind of put a feeler out there to have a conversation with this group. Bridget and I were expressing to Mary some of our own concerns that we've been hearing from supervisors, our supervisors, about time commitment and volunteering on the EA and that kind of pulling people away from the jobs. And I know that I've had concerns about that expressed to me. I know Bridget has as well, so that was kind of the conversation. And I'm just curious, and we're both kind of curious, are other people hearing that, or are you getting pressure, you know, for your involvement or anything like that?
I've asked before at this position.
Okay.
I was told that I needed to do less meetings and less with the EA and things like that. So it was taking too much time away from the office. Okay.
And had you stayed with your current position, would your decision to run for the EA again have been different?
I still would have run for the EA. I mean, they told me I could still run for the EA, but I needed to back off on my responsibilities.
Okay. Anyone else?
I think the thing that I have to, like in the last setting, everything is right there, and we have to complete that day. And I've had to stay late quite a bit to make it off because everything's a lot of time. I was in the time lock, as it is, and every once in a while, I mean, not all the time, but once in a while, I do get. I think I take on too much at some point in time. I'm not creating one of it. So, you know, but I think it works. I think it works. I will be here.
Well, we're glad you're here too.
Well, I initially haven't had anything, but there was a time when all my community meetings were sort of kicking up around the same time, and I began to feel like indirect pressure of constantly being out of the office. Before we learned more about, you know, paid leave, it was sort of a gray area with me and my supervisor because I'm not exact about where I was going to put those hours. And I think most notably, my director has requested that I make up some time this week. And when I asked my manager, who was acting as a middleman, you know, just so you understand how paid leave works, we got a lot going on, you know. So I have, you know, a second job outside of this place, and activities, hobbies, other occupations. So it's not a big deal, but it's just something now when committee meetings are coming up, we have GPADs, these meetings, which I all love to attend. I now begin to think about, well, this is going to be something I'm going to have to make up. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm not, you know, meeting my deadlines at work. You know, that's not the issue. Mm-hmm. So it feels arbitrary at times. But.
And I'm just the opposite, I guess. I feel bad, but I mean, when you guys got scored in the right letter,
mm-hmm.
you know, once it's, I mean, for me at least, it was, my associate dean thought it was commendable and embraced it, even my HR manager, because apparently I think Emma from Johnson. And so it might depend on where our units are and our cultures, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
and that culture needs to be pushed up maybe from senior leadership in Cornell, but I didn't get any pushback. Now, with that said, I try and come in maybe the right kind of things, but with the subcommittee called the University Benefits Committee, what's the guy's name, Paul?
Paul Bishop.
Paul and his team. They use Doodlepad, so when we do make a meeting, I don't know how your meetings are set up, they're watching for subcommittees, but at least they're mindful that they give us the online Doodlepad app, or it's called Doodle app, where you just pick your what's preferred for you, and then they make the meeting based on most of everybody to make it. So I try and always put my day job first. If I can make that, I will. So I don't know if that's mm-hmm. people are, you know, as long as you're not compromising, like you said, if you get your job done and get your work done, mm-hmm. I think it should be a burden.
Well, and I don't think with mine that it was so much my supervisor. I mean, he was in favor of me doing committees and encouraged me. I think it was more the other staff members in the office that mm-hmm. were complaining and causing mm-hmm. trouble. And it wasn't a case where I wasn't getting my work done. I mean, the work was getting done. Mm-hmm. I would stay late if I needed, but
stay late if you needed, but off the clock.
Yes.
Which
I was told that my employees, my time away for EA related stuff, did not have to count against me because I was doing university business, is what my supervisor told me.
Mm-hmm.
But the staff members were complaining.
Can we have an idea then? This is just something about this budget season right now for a lot of us. Well, if the EA had this budget line item called staff, in other words, the process is you need to do 2 hours that week because of EA work. There should be a way in your time card or something that you can have a line item in the EA budget that we have a funding from the university so that it doesn't affect
right.
labs and departments. So let's say we had $10,000. And just like a time card, the units of the university financially would not have to worry about the dollar amount.
Right.
And then if it's an issue of the workplace of others, I would have HR or the Mary and all maybe have a session with these senior directors and say it's actually commendable what you're doing above and beyond. I guess this doesn't mm-hmm. tie this into a long meeting, but I could see a way we could go and have
my
a bucket of funding.
Leadership.
Yeah, well, I was still, Anyway, it's a thought. We get the fund. And then you just got the hours from yeah. that fund.
At the veterinary meeting that we had that I was invited to, I found out that there already is the policy in place for release time
mm-hmm. yeah.
That's smaller than the 2.5 that we even know was in the system, and in charge didn't really brought that. So, you know, take full advantage of that. But you want to take advantage of that.
So when you come to the EA meeting, you put down that it's paid for.
I put it down in the law watch, to be honest with you.
But do you supplement your time with, like, the paid leave, or are you making up your hours somewhere else?
I make up the hours. I put down that I'm gone, like, from 12 to 1.
So flex, as in flex time?
Yeah. No, lunch.
Right,
no,
but you're essentially flexing your schedule. You're taking a longer lunch, but then you're maybe staying a half hour later there. Somewhere else. Okay. So you shouldn't have to do that. You should be putting in your regular lunch and then paid leave for the rest of it.
So should we as the EA come up with some policies that have that relate to all of it?
Yeah.
If you're a EA member, whether your department likes it or not, this is all
yeah. Well, that's right. That's part of the new personal development committee that people would get 2.5 hours of release time, and in that it incorporates
mm-hmm.
volunteerism.
Mm-hmm.
Campus mm-hmm. volunteerism.
Mm-hmm. I would move that it's separate from that.
Yeah, I
it should be separate.
We're
going
to have our meeting.
I think the idea would be that the EA is a benefit to the university staff as a collective,
yeah.
and that, you know, it would be great to have some sort of resolution that says volunteerism for an employee in good standing. Volunteering on the EA is something that's supported, and they are granted release time
mm-hmm.
for that. And that's, you know, if somebody wants to do the L's or somebody wants to do slope day or whatever, that doesn't fall under the purview. But my feeling is if people are willing to step up and serve, and the fact that there's not a lot of us who are willing to step up and serve, that you should be able to have something behind you a little more.
And hopefully that would resolve some of the issues of why some people don't step up and serve. As we talked before, there's no dining employees here. There's no facilities employees here. They really need to be represented. It's important. And so, Elle, if I got it correct, you actually use a different system? Do you actually use a paid leave system when you
Yeah, I do, but I'm just very happy to make up hours on this, but it doesn't.
I reached out to my HR representative this week, and the clarification I got was that the policy is actually vague on purpose, so that departments and supervisors have the ability to make that decision themselves.
Yeah.
But I agree. I think that maybe we need to try to move forward with.
I think one of the reasons I'm putting it down is a slightly longer
one,
is I can't find the code.
Well, it's not P-A-R, it's A-K-P. Yeah.
I think one of the issues, too, is, I think there's some committees and there's some things that you could probably do with certain people and certain job functions that would be a little more favorable on. But I think it all goes back to the staff as a strategic priority for the university, and there's no culture or precedent that's been set by the university that this is an essential function. You know, this is like for those of us that get the cards that say you have to come in on a show day.
Yeah.
Like, this is essentially, we should, like, we're those sort of people in this role. It is a central function. We use a shared governance model. We do it at student level, graduate student level, faculty level, at university level, whole. I mean, this is an integral part of the operation of the university. And if we really can't give up an hour and a half or 2 hours a month to come here and try to make the university better, then I don't really feel a hope for the university.
Yeah, I mean, there has to be a standard. I worked at a hospital, which is under the umbrella, in a sense, of the vet school. My supervisor, my dad, has pushed it that you're keeping that on your time clock. You are getting paid. Don't you start claiming the hours that you're not getting paid for, because I did when I first started. I said, okay, I left and I was done when I came to a couple of things. And they've been really good about it. So why should Michelle, who's like right downstairs, have to play with the fact that she's taking an hour and a half lunch? So we do need, I think, complete clarity. I'm all for policies and protocol. If we start having vagueness, then that's where we get into trouble. So it is quite shocking that a colleague, a couple of, floors down, is having to play with her.
Well, the pressure wasn't necessarily coming from my super who was for it, got the letter and so on, and was, happy that we were meeting with the trustees and everything. It was coming from someone who's tracking every hour on in and out of there on the calendar. So I wanted to
Right. Oh, that's fun.
It's on my time card.
Right.
That's a similar situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm at an opposite of what really comes to is a new position for my table.
I'm actually was just asked to take on another role starting on June 2nd. So I've had some very long conversations with my administration, so how's that going to work? Because I've already told you that now I will incur overtime to take on this role. So how do I also represent and still go to committees and meetings and do the extra work when I'm already, before any of this, get into an overtime situation anyway? So,
what was that? My conversation with, I'll make up the hours.
Oh, we'll talk about it when you need to.
Well, I've been told some of it.
Well, that's okay. You're usually quite efficient.
As far as employers go, I'm 2 years past, and my employer is not giving my team my review. I would love to see him and see where I stand with that. I don't know if something's changed. Well, he filled one out. We never sat down with it, put it through without a signature. It was brought back to me to sign. But we don't have the time. And then this year we did our personal review and everything, and I called them and I said, isn't something else supposed to happen? Oh yeah, you're supposed to have a sit down, and I went,
I don't know how we're going to get supervisor feedback if we don't get employee feedback.
No, don't get me wrong. Everyone's good. It depends on the experience, but
sounds like we have a lot of good thoughts and suggestions, and that maybe we should
And reiterate the squirt letter via electronically, maybe not the HR person of that place, reiterate it with a supervisor. I mean, there needs to be some steps. I mean, if Scorton signed off on it,
then
I don't know how much higher you can go other than reiterating to the system, you know.
What if next year you have, like, a bring your dog to work day?
No, no, bring your supervisor if you're...
But sometimes it's not even a supervisor. It ends up becoming a college problem, as I very well know that there are so many people sitting under the vet calls that have not had a sit-down review.
Yeah. Wow.
And me being new to Cornell, why am I having to tell them that, oh, my God, I'm shocked? You know, and they've been here for 7 years or plus. So why, if you bring your supervisor and say, well, I haven't had the time, I haven't been told, and I haven't been corrected by my HR people, then... Right. So then why, you know, if we bring in our supervisor, they're still going to look at you and go, oh, it's the next level up.
I think that's
really
tough. It's a common
topic.
College. But I think people
want
to do that. It's much more than supervisors. Yeah. Right. Because
I could be more empowered and recognize the majority of what I spend most of my life.
Feedback from folks on where they were. I mean, I think this is good. I mean, I think that there are some issues that we may be able to fairly easily clarify, like the time and the code, and that this is considered time worked, and maybe get that into the notification when something goes to your supervisor saying that you're serving, and this is how your time is counted. I think that's an easily doable thing, but I think there's a larger issue of changing the culture and viewing this as a positive thing rather than a you're messing around and you're playing and you're not doing the work.
Can you stay separate from our, you know, 2.5 hours of wellness?
That's what I'm saying.
The
hard thing is that I think employees, you have to make a choice at some point. You can't say necessarily, I want to take 2.5 hours for wellness, and I want to take 2.5 hours for the EA. Oh, and I want to take a class, and I want to take 2.5 hours for that.
But here's the thing. A lot of times it goes well beyond the 2.5 hours.
Does the committee work fall under the paid leave thing? Because I got the letter from Scorton when I was on the EA, but I didn't get anything for being on the new committee.
Well, that's part of your role in the EA is to serve on committees.
Well, I think that's something that we certainly can work on in the future.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent. So the next thing, I sent everyone the employee survey team recommendations, the brief document. I don't know if somebody got a chance to look at that, if you had any comments or questions, thoughts.
Please.
Joe, I know you got some. Go ahead.
No, I don't. Very robust, very nice.
I just have one question.
Okay.
Under the recognition of excellent work, I don't know why Karen put this, but it says that the first award ceremony is scheduled for late April. That's actually
May 9th. Well, I think this year will be awesome.
So we can
update that piece to say, you know, late in the maybe even have them say something late in the spring for us.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Okay. Otherwise, it looks great.
Any other thoughts? Because this is the last chance for it's going to be spiral bound and tabbed and prettied up and sent off to David and Mary with this along with probably, 300 more pages of documentation?
Will there be accessible for the members of the EA, the complete report?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll have, we'll have, Beth's going to put it all together so we can scan it and send it to the whole group to look at. And the fuck time. Excellent. Oh my God, I just thought of that in here. Something that we talked to Mary about was completely. I just lost it. Alright, I will try and remember it. No other thoughts, comments? David?
Recently changing lists. It was kind of frustrating for me to read under the supervisor's feedback. Several areas of volunteering use this process in 2013, but there's a lot of the areas on campus that are in the supervisor's feedback for years. You know what I mean? Is that me taking into account? I think look at their data along with our volunteers for this year. I mean, is that being done here on campus? Why not?
It's just implementing, right? The same,
The vet
school has been doing it. I think what they were talking about is the fact that there's now not a new process, but a method that will be the university method. And I don't know if it is the same method as the vet school, but I know Mary's office and Human Resources and Safety Services is doing it, as were a couple of other ones. I can't remember exactly who, but that they were doing that. But we can certainly go back to Rick and ask him to incorporate in there that some units have been doing it prior to this. Would that be helpful?
So, the 2013 review, the one I'm working on?
No.
No.
Yeah.
But I haven't written yet, which is by the end of June.
Because we're in FY
13. So then next year will be standard approaching.
That is the goal. Should the recommendation be accepted?
That's great.
All right. The next piece on this is. After that, we have before we have to vote in Leslie Morris and Linda Cole Howell have did not get in the initial round of elections for the EA for next term. They have both submitted for roles on the EA, so we would need either vote them in or say no to them. I mean.
Why did they not get in?
Because they weren't sure if they were going to run at the time that there was the deadline, so they submitted after that fact. So, can by show of hands, is there anyone who is opposed to voting in Leslie Morris as a member of the 13-14 EA? Okay, can we vote on Linda and Leslie? Is there any opposition to voting Linda and Leslie in as EA members for next term? Seeing no opposition, you vote them both in.
Congratulations.
Thank you. All right, so moving along, so Greg, UA report? It was a great meeting last night. Kudos to Greg for a great meeting.
No, kudos to Joy. The UA was a busy UA meeting yesterday. Passed several sort of housekeeping items. The biggest thing, some of the bigger things is the ombudsman sort of operating document, which they use to sort of guide their principles. Hasn't been really touched since the 70s when it was created. So it was really out of alignment with the National Ombudsman Association, which is sort of their group that they use and look to for best practices. So it was a very simple change it wasn't a simple change, it was a significant change, but it was a very simple process. And I think we respect the work they do as professionals and they know best. So that went through unanimously. We also reappointed Charlie Walcott as University Ombudsman and Mary Beth Grant as the Judicial Administrator. We appointed three employees and 10 or so students, and then a pool of qualified students
in the event that there needs to be for the university hearing review board. We also dissolved the safety advisory committee from the UA because it went to live in another area. It still exists, but it just doesn't exist with the UA anymore. This wasn't needed. We had a lengthy and tiring discussion on the right to free expression and free speech on campus, which had been sparked by the November 19th protest between the Palestinian group and the Israeli group on campus and counter-protest and protest in the plaza. The CJC and some members of the assembly had a desire to provide some clarifying language to let folks know that there is no permit needed in outdoor space for certain impromptu rallies, protests, marches, demonstrations, etc. And that counter protests didn't count as disruptions to university functions and things like that. There was a what some folks call a backdoor or permit light clause in there that there was language that was put in the proposed code that essentially said, even though not required, a group may file for university use of property form in an effort to encourage that the appropriate safety services, university administrators, and various folks are aware of the situation. That it was felt that there wasn't enough community input from the community members that disagreed with the language and other members of the university assembly. So it was a good heated hot debate that then got tabled indefinitely. So the code still lives in its current form and is extremely unclear in its current state. And it's going to be the charge of the UA and the CJC if they so choose to try and reevaluate that and have a much longer drawn out input of the common period in the fall. We felt at CJC level that there was adequate involvement from the community, and just because you didn't get 13,500 undergraduates responding, that it doesn't mean that the silence or absence of response wasn't a response in itself. And that those that did want to be vocal about their desired changes were at every meeting and expressed themselves fully. So nothing really came out of that, but it's still going to be a campus hot topic. And then the last thing was, there was a change to the code passed last night, which clarifies the rights for the complainant, the summary decisions, agreements, and the appeal process. So as Mary Beth stated before, you go through the university judicial system, and Mary Beth, or a judicial administrator, would say, here's the verdict. We created some finality and we clarified some timelines and tried to make it more friendly to both the JA and to the students so that it was much clearer in the code. So nothing else. We had a 6.4 policy discussion. We had a parking presentation. Rates are going up 2%. They continue to try to pool and limit various types of permits. In an effort to, I think 3 years ago there was over 400 permit types, and now they're down to like 42 different types of permits. One of the questions that was raised is why the university vehicles had to pay the university to have a permit on campus. The response was that's just a flaw of the bureaucratic enterprise system.
Big red tape.
But it also
is.
I'm
starting
to ride, not paying it with our veterinary vehicles. How long
they
get away with it.
Yeah, I tried to do that with mine, they get pretty quick. I don't know. That's a great question.
It's not different than any of the
other units. Right. So I also believe it was an effort to try to keep in range how many vehicles people registering.
Sure. And, I think one of the interesting things that the graduate students raised is up on my CAD book, which is graduate student housing. Mm-hmm. You're paying rent for your apartment, but you have a family, you don't get parking. Mm-hmm. Your parking is now $800 or whatever it is a year.
They don't even get parking in those apartments?
No.
You literally walk across the sidewalk and it doesn't become student academic service for campus life.
it becomes the minute you step into the parking lot. So there was some hope that clarity could be brought to that situation at some point in the future. Did I miss anything?
Just that parking rates will be increasing by 2%, if you didn't say that. You did say that, all right. That was when my lights went red.
So all currently paid parking rates, right?
2%.
It's going to increase by 2%.
So motorcycle free,
there's wherever else.
So lifetime.
Lifetime.
Does that mean they're going to maintain the parking lot better so we don't fall?
Probably.
That's grounds. That's a completely different group.
I mean, what's our money going towards? That's what I guess we
know. So I think one of the things, too, that's interesting is some of the meter parking. They'll have mobile renewal. So like if you park by Willard Strait ever and there's those meters there and you put your name on number 64 or whatever, you can link that in some way to your phone. So it'll say, okay, you have 10 minutes left. Would you like to buy more time? Which is sort of an interesting thing. They're trying to work to increase directional signage, making it just easier to navigate the campus in ways and having more of a robust transportation for the website, so folks visiting can have a better sense of where to go and not get there, where to park, where to things like that.
Thank you. One other thing that I remembered that I said Mary said and I forgot. Bridget and I also talked to her about Resolution 4, which is the one about feedback from the employee engagement survey about what's being done at the college and unit level. And Mary, we expressed our concerns about the fact that there's no mechanism to make sure the staff stays informed of what's happening, so it's not transparent. So she is going back and talking to David, the deans, the provost and whatnot, and whatever comes out of their annual reports and their discussions about what's moving forward will go on the university website for survey response, where people will be able to go and link to that, and we'll get that link and we can put it out and they will also put it out, so there will be transparency. So that's that. You want to talk about Kirkland?
Yeah, I'll be only 2 minutes because I just want to keep everyone in the loop. So for those of you that were here for the meeting we had with the president and Mary Offerman at lunch meeting we had, and we'll get clarification last for Amy afterwards off record to review the audio tapes, but I could have heard it wrong, but when I brought up the care fund and the $25,000 and the endowment piece of it, I have good photographs of them. I remember President Scorton writing something down and saying, this is something I'll take on myself. I already told Mary that I didn't expect Mary to take care of it because she has enough on her plate. And I also remember saying that Charlie's plate is not going to do anything because it's not in his own. But I remember I was sitting here and I remember doing that. But so I sent an email last week, or was it last Friday, just doing, I shared it with Tanya and Greg for now, only because they've been helping as our team with the care fund. But my note was just basically saying, thanks again. We want to follow up. What's our next step to see this through? And the notes I got back from both the president and Mary were, sorry for any confusion. Mary, I don't mind. Mary said, sorry for any confusion. It's not on my plate to deal with. I'm fine with that. But the president said, sorry for any confusion. I don't have this kind of funding in my department or in my bucket, and this is something the EA should do. I mean, I don't know. I'm asking for clarification. Did I hear it wrong, or did I hear, and please let you all speak. I just thought I took a, you know, what did you hear?
I heard exactly what you said.
We would get $25,000 a year from him until we figured out how to endow it, for sure.
Right.
At the very least,
so
he would take it on himself. Right. Yeah.
Because there were no other mechanisms in play.
Then we interviewed the audio tape. Give
him a transcript of the audio tape.
I would be very polite and special, but I just make sure Joe, didn't understand what I heard at that meeting.
The only thing that I wonder if what he was writing down saying he was going to take on was the talking to Charlie Slager and that group about making this an endowment priority. Because I know we were talking about both of those things in there, and I'm wondering if, because I heard him say I'm taking it on too. I'm just wondering if he was thinking that piece and not the funding.
But he said, oh, it's only $25,000. Yeah, I mean,
again, it's all about the administration has this money, we could fund it. Maybe he was, in his confusion statement, he was thinking of, different funding, a different funding pool, but there was a direct statement about there being that money in his office.
So, and Gemma and
Linda,
I remember the nod of the head, like, okay, I left the meeting, like, we don't have to worry about the $25,000 a year anymore.
Yeah.
And we still have to work with the team to figure out how to develop. That's how I left under Gemma. Like, okay, a couple weeks later, which was last week, hey, thanks again. What's our next step? Fiscal year's coming up. And then I got that. I just want to make sure, I think before we proceed and we'll take this offline, is
yeah, look at
the but I just wanted this group to clarify if I misunderstood, and it's, you know, okay.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if in his mind those two pieces were
so maybe offline when you get a chance, can you share on how that works in your
file? It's online.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
So I need to go and
look
okay.
into it.
Just go to the data.
Anybody else is welcome, too. And it's not about, it's just clarifying, and then if we still were a bit confused, I still would expect. So we'll talk, but my goal is still to have them fund it. But I heard it wrong or not, I still would like them to fund 25 a year until we figure out how to endow it. And then any fundraising is that efforts we do, or any deposits we get from direct payroll, that still just goes to the bucket.
Above and beyond.
Okay, thank you. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you. Very quickly, we have Amy shared the meeting schedule for next year. So we're up front, right?
Yep.
So we need to approve the meeting schedule for next year. Nothing has changed on that schedule except there was scheduled to be a meeting on January 1st.
Mm-hmm.
There obviously will be no meeting on January 1st because the university is closed. So, and so it was moved to the 8th.
But I'm open to other suggestions also.
So does anyone have any comments or concerns? Also, I believe we made a commitment for our June 19th meeting to be in Geneva. Am I remembering it correctly?
Yeah.
This year.
Fine.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I'm just putting that in people's minds.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I will be able to
do it.
Before
wellness
is
done. Yeah, we get a bump. We'll talk about it.
Okay.
All right. So can I make a motion? Does anybody? Oh, my gosh.
Can we move
to approve?
As proposed?
As proposed, yes. Yes.
Would you caveat the annual
please
on the calendar?
Yeah. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, great. Thank you.
All right.
David?
Amy, sorry. Mm-hmm. You're going to do our calendars for
Hey, David, can we move to that discussion to our next meeting? Okay, great. So we'll put that on.
Can I just say something
like
that?
Sure.
Anybody, because I don't have any experience with this, that takes transportation at like 4:30, 4 to 4:30, 4 to 5 from like central campus to Geneva. Can you just let me know what that experience is like? Because all I know is from central campus to AI.
It's wicked.
From central to B, it's good.
It's good?
Yeah. It's very nice.
At 4:30, in between 4 and 5.
10 people on the bus. It's not overly crowded to the point like it is to AI.
Yeah,
exactly. Okay. Yeah, they need
to. Well, sometimes I've seen people can or some routes.
Not usually like the 81, though, because the 81 is what services the lot out there. It's usually not that crowded at all.
But the difference is 83 would be not.
Right.
So that's why.
And you get a lot of the students going out towards the A because of
North Carolina
all of that. But yeah, going out to the B lot, you don't have a lot. Usually, there's not a whole lot of students usually on there.
Okay. So, can I make a motion that we extend the meeting for 10 minutes? All in favor?
Aye.
Great. Thank you. So the next step is that we need to adjourn our currently seated EA. So anyone who's not continuing on the EA next year is free to go. But whatever happens next, for those of us who are not continuing on, we don't get to vote. What we're going to do now is go into voting on our new executive team for 13-14. So, anybody who's not continuing? David, you're not. You're not going to be on the EA next year.
Oh, who said that?
You didn't run.
I thought you just ran.
No, that was Leslie and Linda. Yeah.
You did not run. Well, I knew that we had a point. Yeah, you were up for.
According to this contact with everyone that wasn't
We're glad to hear that you expect to still be on the day.
Yeah, we're glad to hear.
Yeah. Okay. So, does he have to fill out the paperwork?
Motion to
vote David into next year's EA. So, all in favor?
Aye.
Great. Thank you. Okay. That's how we get so far. So just very quickly, okay, guys, if you want to get some time. So I will just get...
You go, girl.
go for the guys. I am currently seated on the EA for next year. I may have to tender my resignation, but I'm not giving up my fight yet for that.
You go.
So, I may or may not be with you next year. So, that said, we need to vote on a new slate of executive members for next year. Do you want me to just run with this, or do you want to run with it?
I'll run with it.
Okay. Go for it.
We need to entertain nominations of members for the position of chair of the EA.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.